Go ahead and open up your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11, and you can open up your bulletins also to the teaching sheet if you want to follow along with that. So last week, we began looking at Hebrews chapter 11 as we've been slowly working our way through Hebrews. And I, last week, defined faith as this. It was, faith is the confidence of things hoped for, and it's the conviction of things not seen. And so it's knowing that what we hope for in Jesus Christ will come true. Knowing that we know that we know that what we hope for in Jesus Christ will come true. That Jesus Christ one day will come back and will rescue us from our sins, from this world. And then it's having the conviction that what is not seen is still true. That we have not seen certain things take place, but we still know that it is true. And so last week I gave two examples about what faith does. First of all, it leads to us pleasing God. It leads to us pleasing God that as we step out in faith, as we have more and more faith, it causes us to act in a way that pleases God, that God actually commends us or congratulates us for our faith and for our behavior. And then second, that it leads us to see this world, not from the world's perspective, but from God's perspective. And which may at times, God's perspective may at times seem a little strange to the world. And yet by faith, we follow and look at God's perspective over the world's perspective. So that's where we are at last week. And we're now going to begin with verse 8 in just a minute. And we're going to continue to look at what faith is and what it does. And this time we're going to look at the life of Abraham and Sarah. Now, I'm going to confess from the beginning that there's a lot of stuff in here, a lot of directions I could have gone. And so for the sake of not bringing you here and not talking until dinner time, what I'm used to saying is dinner, like 5 o'clock dinner time, not lunch dinner time as some people, So for the sake of not making this a 5-hour long sermon, I'm going to have to just do my best to touch on some of the main points that I see here in the next 11 or 12 verses. So we will miss some stuff as well, but this is not an exhaustive Bible study. We're just going to touch on the highlights here, and you can always dive in more deeply on your own. So first of all, we're going to see how faith plays an important role in obedience by looking at the life of Abraham and Sarah. But before we go there, I want to ask the question, why should we think that this is important? Why is it important to know about the life of Abraham and Sarah? And why is it important to understand that faith leads us to obey better? Why is that important? There's a lot of reasons that I could give, but I'm going to give just one. And let me give now Ephesians chapter 6. Let me show you Ephesians chapter 6, where Paul says, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil." So Paul's saying that the devil is out there, and that he is actually, that he's scheming against us. How dare he? And yet that's what he's doing. And then 1 Peter 5:8, Peter says, "Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." That doesn't sound good. I was going to give you a visual. I found this cool clip on YouTube of a lion attacking another animal, but I figure you've seen that. You know what I'm talking about here, but there was the lion went up and he jumped. He didn't just smack him on the butt. No, the lion grabbed him by the neck. Grabbed the animal by the neck and started tearing at it, and blood was going everywhere. And that is what Peter is saying, that the devil is trying to do to us. You see, the devil is not just some guy, some cute little guy in red tights and a pitchfork that is standing on our shoulder telling us like a few bad things to think. No, he is like a roaring lion seeking to get to your neck and rip it apart with blood splatting everywhere. That's what he's trying to do. Not a nice guy. And there are these are just two of many examples that I could give about the devil, about Satan, wanting to destroy us, wanting to go against us, wanting to have war against people. See, Satan is out to attack both Christians and non-Christians. And if he can, he would like to devour us. So how do we go against that? Well, Ephesians 6:10, as I just read, Paul says, be strong in your own abilities. No. He says, be strong in the Lord. And one of the ways that we grow in our strength in God is through obeying God. Meaning, the more obedient to God we are, the more effective we are for God, and the stronger we are for Him. So your ability to fight Satan, to fight against his attacks, are going to depend on your strength. But not your strength in your own power, but your strength in God. That comes partly through obedience. And we're going to see now that faith is one of the things that leads to obedience. I enjoy reading from time to time about the Civil War. And one of the things that comes up every time I read one of those biographies about the entire war as a whole is how the Union Army was stronger, had more troops, had more resources, and yet got their tail ends kicked for the first year or two. Why was that? Well, there's a lot of different reasons, but one of them was because the generals of the armies would not attack. They were always on the defensive, always trying to maneuver away, while Lee and the Confederates were just attack, attack, attack. And he could not. Abraham Lincoln kept telling the generals, he would say, attack them, go up against them, go get them. And yet the generals kept on just trying to get out of the way, trying to protect themselves. And I wonder if we had had a general that would have attacked from the beginning, would this war have ended more quickly? I don't know, but possibly. You see, obedience is key. It messes up armies, and it messes up people's spiritual lives as well. So we're now going to look at how faith helps us obey God better, and how we can, as we obey, we are countering the attacks of the devil. So let's look at Hebrews chapter 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs to him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that has foundations, those whose designer and builder is God. By faith, Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one man, and in him as good as dead, were born descendants, as many as the stars of heaven, and as many as the innumerable grains of sand by the seashore. I'm going to stop there for a minute. And so in what he's talking about there, the author of Hebrews, is that in Genesis 12, Abraham was called by God to leave his home country, to leave everything that he was familiar with, and to go into a, he doesn't even say, just to go to a place that he would show him later. And he was to bring his wife and just go. And then, oh, by the way, you who have struggled with infertility for your entire life are now going to have a baby in your old age, is what he was told. Now, if you've heard this story a number of times, you're sort of used to it. It doesn't shock you as much. But imagine this. I was gonna use. I don't see Neil in here, but Neil and Sandy usually sit down here. I see Sandy here. Well, what if God all of a sudden told Neil and Sandy to pack up from Hampstead and to go to a place that he would show them in Africa? They couldn't get there by plane. They would just have to walk or boat over there. And they couldn't use cell phones. And where they were going, they had no idea about. And oh, by the way, you would have another child biologically, and that child was going to become a great nation. Now, they are young at heart, but they're no spring chickens anymore. Is that fair to say? Okay. So think about, from Neil and Sandy's perspective, that if they were told to do that, can you imagine how crazy that sounds? That they would never see their family again. They would never talk to them. They would be in a strange foreign land, and that they were going to have a baby at their age. That sounds a little weird, but that is exactly what God had told Abraham to do. That's what he told him to do. That's what he told him. And yet, Abraham, it says, obeyed. That he listened to God. Now, what would lead a person to do something like that I may even call a little crazy? What would lead a person to step out and do something crazy like that? I would say the answer is faith. That faith leads us to obey God. The more faith we have in God, the more willing we are to obey God, even in the crazy. Even in the crazy. The stronger your faith is, the more willing you are to do that. Last month, I read a biography about Walt Disney. And Disney, he was in the 1920s that he started getting famous. And he gained some success by creating an animated cartoon character. Does anyone know the name of that character? I was thinking of someone else, but I suppose it could have been him. There's another one I'm thinking of that he became more famous with. All right, before Mickey Mouse. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. Any of you remember him? No. 1920s, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit gained a lot of notoriety for Walt Disney. And he began his company, his little poor company, began to gain some success because of Oswald and the animated shorts that Oswald produced, or that Disney produced about Oswald. Now, the problem is that Disney created Oswald, but it was distributed through a man named Charles Mintz. And Charles Mintz had a contract for Disney that was more favorable towards Mintz. In fact, the original contract they signed was that Mintz would have the rights to Oswald. And so as a year or two went on, then they started trying to renegotiate their contract, and Disney wanted a contract that was more favorable to him because he was becoming more popular and he was still not making money. And yet Mintz realized that he had the rights to Oswald, and so he would try to make a contract that was more favorable to himself. So we have these two people now battling for a contract, and Disney had to make a choice if he would go against or walk away from the contract while at the same time walking away from his character that made him famous, Oswald. And so if he did that, he would basically be stepping out, losing his distributor and his most famous character. And Disney decided that that was exactly what he would do. He walked away because he believed that he had the ability to succeed even without Oswald and even without Mintz. And so later on, he created another character that became even more famous, as you all said already, Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse. And that then caused them to grow even more successful after that. Now, why do I bring up Mickey Mouse in a Southern Baptist church? Disney was willing to step out into the unknown. He was willing to do the crazy, it seemed, because he believed in himself and his abilities. And that is exactly what Abraham did, except he wasn't believing in his abilities. He was believing, or let me say, having faith in God's abilities. And so Abraham's willingness to step out in faith was because he believed so strongly that God would do what he said he would do. And so he was willing to go off into a crazy land. He was willing to be obedient. That's what we're called to do as well. I believe that God has some things planned for some of you that might seem a little crazy. Some of you, God may be calling you to do things that are even defying logic. Where at first glance, you would look at them and say, God, there is no way that I could accomplish this. And you know what? You're right. There is no way that you could accomplish it in your power. But he's not asking you to do it in your power. He's asking you to do it in his power. In his power. To illustrate this, I want to bring up my youngest here. Paul, come on up to the stage. We didn't practice this, so let's see how it goes. Can you run? Can you run up? We have lunch in 20 minutes, so I'm on a clock here. All right, come on up. All right, so this is Paul. He just turned 5. And Paul, are you listening? All right. I forgot to move these chairs before the service. Can you go ahead and move them for me? Can you go ahead and move those? All right, I wasn't expecting this, but okay. I should have added another chair. Stronger than I expected. Yes, yes. So if it had gone as planned, what would have happened is he would have not been able to do it. Not been able to do it. There we go. He would have just sat on it. And I would have come over and said, all right, you can't do it, but with my help, we can do it. And then we would take it. Here. Oh, I can't do this with it. Yeah, I don't want to hurt my back. I've got a week here. Go ahead and here. Let's move it now. You got it? Right there. Push it. There we go. Yeah. It's this way. This way. Okay.
And we got it. Good job. Okay. Can we go on down now? Thank you very much. He moved it a little. We'll say a little. It was much easier, though, for him to accomplish that with the help of his father. And that is what God is asking us to do as well. God is not asking for us to do the amazing or to be amazing. What he's asking for us to do is to be used by an amazing God. It's a difference. So he's calling you to do the crazy, maybe, but he's not asking you to do it in your own power. He's asking you to rely on him to do it. I want to, though, think about the idea of faith and obedience from a different angle, though. As I just said, God calls us at times to do the spectacular, to do the amazing, to do what defies logic. But there's other times where he calls us to obey what I would call in the midst of the unspectacular. Let me read verse 17. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, who he had received, and he who had received the promises was in the act of offering up his only son, of whom it was said, through Isaac shall your offspring be named. He considered, this is Abraham, considered that God was able to even raise him from the dead, from which, figuratively speaking, did receive him back. So at this point in the story of the life of Abraham, Abraham had moved on. He had actually miraculously, through the power of God, had a baby with Sarah. And Abraham and Sarah had named him Isaac, and he now grew up a little bit, at least. But then God calls Abraham to take his only son, the son that was going to turn him into a great nation, and he was to take him up to a mountain and sacrifice him. Sacrifice him. Now, I don't want us to get caught up on the idea of child sacrifice, because as we look at the story, God clearly did not intend for Isaac to be sacrificed. He didn't. What he was doing there is testing Abraham. He was testing Abraham to see if he was willing to give up on his dream or what he called to do the unspectacular. From Abraham's perspective, God was asking him to give it all up. You see, faith is not simply stepping out to do the spectacular. Sometimes it involves obeying with faith, but obeying in the unspectacular. By faith, we do things like we're called to go overseas as missionaries. But with that same faith, we're also called to leave things that we love. We're called to fail at things at times. Or we're called to endure disappointments in the midst of obeying God. That too requires faith. I was speaking with a friend this week, not at this church, so you don't have to look around. But he told me that he's married, and there were parts of his marriage that he was finding were pretty disappointing. And he did not foresee those areas of his marriage changing. And so he had a choice at that point. When he came to the realization that that aspect of his marriage was likely never going to change, never going to improve, at least to the point where he was hoping for it to improve, he could either obey God and stay in that marriage, or he could disobey God and move on, divorce her, try to find someone else that might, quote unquote, meet his needs. And he is determined to stay in the marriage. And he's accepted the fact that it may not ever be spectacular in that area, but he will obey. He will obey. And what would lead a person to do that? And that would be faith. Faith, knowing that pleasing God is more important than making yourself happy. And this leads us to another part of the passage that I want us to look at. Let's look at verse 13, and this will give us a clue as to why people are willing to really stay in the midst of the unspectacular. It says, "These all died by faith, not having received the things promised, but having seen them and greeted them from afar, and having acknowledged that they were strangers and exiles in the earth. For people who speak thus make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of that land from which they had gone out, they would have had the opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country. That is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city." These verses could be a sermon in and of itself, But I want to focus on just one part, that as followers of God, let's think about this, we are adopted into his family. And when we are adopted into his family, we our identity is changed, and we now have a different homeland. We're no longer so-and-so from New Hampshire, or so-and-so from this place, but we as Christians are now so-and-so from heaven. That is our identity. And so for Christians, this world is not our home. It's not our home. And there will come a day where we will get something, where we will get home, and it will be far better than what we have right now. In just a couple weeks, actually, I'm going to be traveling to China to adopt our fourth child. Her name, we call her Grace. And so she is in China. I have to fly over there to get her. Now, I have this love-hate relationship with traveling. It's exciting for a little bit, and it's fun. It's a little bit, you know, off routine. But, being in those planes for about 20 hours, all cooped up in the seats, because I don't get business class, and I'm back with in the economy. And then you get there, and it's a totally different time zone, and you're waking up in the middle of the night, ready to go for the day, and yet you still have 6 hours. And the food, the Chinese food in China is completely different than the Chinese food here in America. And you don't get fortune cookies in China. You don't. And it's just eating at a restaurant once a week is nice, but every day, breakfast, lunch, and dinner gets tiring. And all these things, being away from home, it just wears you down. Just wears, at least wears me down. I don't like it. I don't like it too much. There's going to be times in a couple weeks when I'm over there where I'm having a bad day or a bad moment, or I'm on a plane and it's rocking back and forth, and I'm holding the bag next to my mouth, waiting at any moment for me to lose my airplane lunch. And at that point, I'm not going to be thinking, wow, I love traveling. What I'm going to be thinking about is just a certain amount of time until I'm home. Until I'm home. Just 12 more hours on the plane, and then I'm home. And I can rest. And I can eat my normal cereal that I have every breakfast. And I can have my wife's dinner. She cooks. I don't have to worry about where my fortune cookies are going to come from. All that stuff. I'll be home. I'll be dead. Faith leads us to look past all the current difficulties and look towards home. Look towards home and to see that our home will be far better than what's going on right now. That's what Abraham did, and that's why he was willing to go off into a distant land, because he realized that wherever he was not his true home. Faith leads us to look past our current difficulties, realizing that something better is coming, and that we can obey in the midst of these difficulties because we know it will get better, that we can obey in the midst of the unspectacular because we know that even if things are not going well right now, that they will get better one day. And it's with this kind of faith that we can get through the disappointments in life while disobeying God. We can obey God even if we can't have children. We can obey God even if we can't find that husband that we want. We can obey God even if our spouse disappoints us. We can obey God even if we receive that diagnosis that we never wanted to hear. We can obey God when we hear the bad news about a child or about something in our lives that just disappoints us to the core. We can obey God in all these situations because we know that this is not our home, that one day we will be in a better place. I want to transition to look at one last thing now about this passage. Let's look at verse 11. What I'm going to be talking about is not expressly or explicitly written in there, but it's implied throughout the life of the two, and I'll explain. So in verse 11, it says, "By faith Sarah herself received power to conceive, even when she was past the age, since she considered him faithful who had promised." So in 11:11, it says that Sarah had a great amount of faith. Great amount of faith. Are any of you familiar with Genesis chapter 18, the story of Abraham and Sarah? I don't remember Sarah responding as a person of great faith in that story in Genesis chapter 18. In fact, in Genesis 18, we see that the three people that we find out are angels go to Sarah and Abraham and say that by the next year, you're going to have a baby. You're going to have a biological baby. And Sarah laughs at them. And this is not the laughing like, ha ha, I just won the Powerball laugh. This is like a laugh of enduring, a lifetime of infertility, a lifetime of disappointment laugh. And Sarah laughs at them. And at least to me, that at that moment does not seem like she has a lot of faith. It doesn't to me. And yet in Hebrews 11, it says that Sarah was considered him faithful who had promised. And I think this leads us to one of the realities of the Christian life that is good news to us. That all of us as Christians, that if you are a follower of God, you're not going to be perfect. And that you are going to have your ups and you're going to have your downs. And there are going to be times when you have great moments of faith, and there are going to be times when you totally blow it. Sarah did that, I believe. Sarah, in Genesis 18, blew it. And yet, there were other times where she had faith, by the time the author of Hebrews talks about her. She is considered a person of great faith. Think of the life of Abraham. Abraham had a lot of good moments. He had a lot of good moments, but he also had a lot of bad moments as well. And that's because God uses imperfect people. God uses imperfect people. Abraham stepped out of faith and left his homeland, and yet, just a few chapters later, we read that he's scared for his life, and he gives away his wife so that he may be saved. Doesn't sound like a man of faith right there. Later on, his wife, after they've been there for a while, they don't have a child, his wife convinced him to sacrificially sleep with his servant and to have a baby through the servant. So Abraham does that. And yet, after the baby is born, Sarah gets jealous of her, and then Abraham sends the servant and the new baby off to the desert to essentially die, and they would have died if God hadn't stepped in. That does not sound like a person of faith. Yet by Hebrews 11, Sarah and Abraham are called people of great faith, because Abraham had his ups, he had his downs. But this should be an encouragement to us, like I said, that in the midst of your struggles, or in the midst of your imperfections, God can still use you. He can still use you, even if you've messed up. He can still use you, even if you're not perfect in a particular area. That he can still use you, even if you're still struggling. So will you have faith that God can do that? Let me close with this story. On January 24th, 1975, world-renowned pianist Keith Jarrett planned to play in front of a live audience at the Cologne Opera House. And the plan was that at that point he would record an album of him playing at the Opera House, and it would be released as a turns out that this album turned out to be the best-selling solo album in jazz history, and it was the all-time best-selling piano album as well. It's pretty good. But it didn't go smoothly earlier in the day. When Jarrett showed up on the stage to look at the piano, it turns out that he had requested a particular type of piano, one called I can't even pronounce it, it's a Bösendorfer 290 Imperial Grand Piano. Maybe, I don't know. Some fancy looking piano, a big one and a nice one. And he requested that, and what he got, there was a mistake. And so the opera house put out just the rehearsal piano that was backstage. They brought it out and put it on stage, and that was the one he was expected to use. And so that one, the concert organizer, later described that piano that they put out in this way. He said it was completely out of tune. The black notes in the middle didn't work. The pedals stuck. He said it was unplayable. Unplayable. And so Jarrett arrives at the opera house. He walks around it. He pushes a few keys. And his producer, whoever was with him, said that unless we can find a new piano, we're not playing tonight. It's not possible. But it was too late in the day for them to get a new piano. And so at the last minute, they decide to go ahead and play because it was a sold-out audience. And he went out there and started playing. And I read an article that describes what happened at this point. The minute he played the first note, everybody knew it was magic. The audience hushed in awed silence. That night's performance began with a simple chiming series of notes, then quickly gained complexity. Standing up, sitting down, moaning, writhing, Jarrett didn't hold back in any way as he pummeled the unplayable piano to produce something unique. One music critic noted, Mr. Jarrett turned the banal and familiar into something gorgeous and mysterious. And I want to say to the church, through faith, that God can do that with you as well. That he can take the banal and familiar, and he can turn you into the gorgeous and mysterious. Will you let him? Begins by obeying him through faith. If you've never even taken that first step of faith, I want to ask you, will you do that today? It begins just by simply believing that Jesus Christ is who he says he is, that he came to this earth, and that he died for our sins, and that if you believe in him, that he will save you. Will you do that? That is the first step of faith that he's calling you to do. But some of you have already taken that first step, and you're just stuck right now in some area. And I want to encourage you, step out in faith. Step out in